The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. Day two of the siege upon Capitol Hill, the armed insurrection, the violent coup, the attempted overthrow of the United States government, a mob of 100,000 people storming the Capitol. That's what we've been told. And the news media continue with this hysterical, unhinged coverage of the protest on Wednesday that got out of control, basically. That's the truth of it. That's the truth. And again, when you put it up alongside what happened last summer, or even historically, there was a story in PJ Media yesterday about the six other times that people broke into the U.S. Capitol. Six other times. America has a, well, I wouldn't say it's a long history. It's still a relatively newish country compared to many others. But in the past two plus centuries, we have had violent episodes. A little bit of historical context would be helpful, but you can't expect that. You cannot expect to get that in the propaganda media. And they're using this like they have so many other crises. They are using this as a pretext to amass power. Don't let a crisis go to waste. That's the way that they think. This is from Spiked. It says, don't exaggerate the threat of the Capitol rioters. There was some violence. There was some trespassing. That's true. But don't exaggerate it. It says here, and now let's be clear about what did not take place at the Capitol building last night. This was not a fascist coup, as so many shrill, supposedly liberal commentators are claiming. Their flagrant use of the word fascist to describe every political movement they disapprove of is an insult to reason and history. This was not a coup, full stop. This was not a coup. A coup is a conscious effort to illegally seize power from the government. These people couldn't even believe they made it into the Capitol building. They were like children finding candy, a candy store unguarded. And so they were walking around, staying within the bounds, staying on the aisleways, taking selfies, taking pictures, sitting in the speaker's chair. It says here, those of us who genuinely believe in freedom and democracy should call for some perspective on last night's events. Not to excuse the anti-democratic cretins who engaged in riotous behavior, but to guard against an illiberal anti-democratic response from the managerial elites. To ensure that the response to this event, listen to this, to ensure that the response to this event doesn't end up threatening democracy more than the event itself. It's an excellent analysis. And he says here, I fear it will end soon. They're going to use this, just like they did COVID-19, as a pretext to amass more power. And in truth, the crackdown's already coming. Look at the way big tech is operating right now. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all of them just deciding now. They decide whether or not the president of the United States should be able to speak freely on their platform. It says here, across the media, there's a striking disparity between the claims between being made about the Capitol incursion and the photographs of it, just like last summer. We saw the pictures, we saw the images, we saw the video of cities burning. And then the reporting on it, people were saying, it's just peaceful. This is overwhelmingly peaceful. Tell that to the residents of downtown Minneapolis. It says here, the claims are extreme. This is fascism, they say. It's like 1933. The far right is now usurping democracy itself. The German foreign minister even made a reference to the Reichstag fire. Can you believe this? This is a German foreign minister. And why would he draw this conclusion? Because of what they're saying on CNN and at the New York Times. That's why. The Reichstag fire? Really? It says here, it is important to note this disparity because it confirms that something very political is taking place right now. The threat inflation, the wild claims about fascist coup, are transparent efforts by the cosseted political and cultural elites to endow their project with moral importance, to give their restoration of managerial technocratic power after the four-year populist experiment, which is fundamentally the project that Biden and his influential supporters are currently engaged in, the gloss of historical urgency. It is mission creation. You see, this gives their radical leftist agenda the urgency that it needs. It's a mission creation. They've created a mission by seizing upon this so-called insurrection. The article then goes on to talk about social media's ban on the President of the United States. This is something that we here on this program, we're keeping our eyes on closely. There was a piece yesterday at the Federalist. You might have seen the statement that YouTube released saying that they're going to start banning videos that even talk about fraud. You can't even talk about it. You can't even talk about the election being stolen. This is from the Federalist. Google-owned YouTube will ban all videos shedding light on voter fraud in the United States. In the United States' most recent election starting Thursday. So that's as of yesterday. We've got to be careful, I guess, what we say or don't say about election fraud. Because YouTube has spoken. And why have they made this decision? Because there's an armed insurrection. We're in the midst of day two of the siege. The Viking hats, I suppose, are still roaming through the halls of Congress. It says here, as we shared previously, we do not allow content that misleads people by alleging that widespread fraud or errors changed the outcome of the 2020 U.S. presidential election. That's the statement from YouTube. And isn't that amazing? Because that's basically what the deep state said in 2016. Yeah, the Russians, they changed the outcome of this election. And back then, of course, social media has no problem. If the tables are reversed, if it's the other guy, if he gets in, if the one they don't like gets in, then it's all misinformation. It's all over the place. Election tampering with the election, rigging the election. But not now. Not now that Biden he solidified his position as the incoming president. So now they speak. Now they speak out and say, this will no longer be tolerated. It says initially the video platform only removed videos declaring widespread voter fraud. But now the enforcement of the updated policy will include removing and issuing a strike on the channel of the user who posted the content. Strikes on YouTube prevent users from uploading, sharing, and live streaming on their channels for a minimum of a week and can even result in a full ban. And so we've already had some discussions just yesterday in our offices, since we have so many of our videos brought together under the Trumpet.com YouTube channel. I think it's the Trumpet YouTube channel. But we're working as fast as we can just to get our own platform set up at the Trumpet.com so that we can run. Of course, we've already got this service available, but we're just trying to add some bells and whistles to it. But there's coming a time, and I'm sure it'll be fairly soon, when we'll just have to move our audience over to the Trumpet.com website because of this kind of fascist mentality. Forget about the protest on Wednesday for a moment. Because of this, you think about the scriptures that talk about truth failing and how that if you depart from evil, that's in Isaiah 59, you make yourself a prey. You're a target. If you get out there and spread the truth of God, you'll make yourself into an inviting target. And look, if they can do this to the president of the United States, it's like he said when he was being spied on and attacked by the deep state for 4 years. And you'll remember when President Trump was fighting back, he said to the American people, he looked at them or he looked at the camera and he said, look, if they can do this to me, if they can come after me, the president of the United States, they can go after anyone. And now look at what big tech is doing. There they are. And who knows? They're 20-somethings in some room somewhere in Silicon Valley. And they decide what the president of the United States can say and cannot say. You'll notice that Michelle Obama, I'll get to this later, when she spoke out about what the president says or doesn't says, she didn't go to Congress with her complaint. She wrote to big tech. She wrote to Silicon Valley. She said, hey, why are you putting up with this? And let me tell you, they responded. I mean, she's Michelle Obama. She's Barack Obama's wife. These are multimillionaires. This couple's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. They're just looking out for the little people, don't you know? And so they respond. They respond. There's a verse in Amos 5, the New Living Translation, verse 13. So those who are smart keep their mouths shut, for it is an evil time. That's not talking about God's people now. God's people are going to keep speaking until we're gone, until God has to protect us from the great tribulation, until the famine of the word. That's in Amos chapter 8. God's work, God's church will continue to proclaim God's message for as long as we can. But this verse in Amos 5, just in looking out across society, you can see people are going to start reacting like it says in Amos 5:13. Well, we better keep our mouths shut. We might get banned. We might lose our YouTube channel. That's what's coming. That's what's coming. And in the broader sense, like Amos 8 says, there is coming a famine of the word of God. And that says to me, and I hope it says to you, that you better act on this truth, this message, this warning, this gospel, now while there still is time. If you don't have a sense of urgency, now more than ever, then something's wrong with you. You're lethargic spiritually. Amos chapter 5, and well, if you continue on into chapter 6, I think it says, woe unto them that are at ease. You see, it's easy to just get too relaxed and lazy and sluggish when it comes to the truth of God. But Amos 8, let me just read it to you. Verse 11, behold, the days come, says the eternal God, that I will send a famine in the land, not a famine of bread, nor a thirst for water, but of hearing the words of the Lord. That's a prophecy. That's a prophecy. And you think it's impossible because, well, the technology, how could that ever happen? The technology just makes it possible for you to get to anything these days. Really? Really? There was a period there yesterday where nobody heard anything from President Trump. I guess he released a statement early in the morning. And then finally, Twitter puts him back on and he comes out with the video last night. But for quite a few hours, it was pretty quiet. It was pretty quiet at the White House. And now maybe the president would decide himself, OK, I'm going to take a little bit of a break, given what's happened. But these are the fascists running the big tech arena, determining who can say what and when. That's, if you're an American, that's pretty scary. I mean, but knowing what we know in God's church, well, compare it with what it says in Isaiah 59 and Amos 5 and Amos 8. We've got to be prepared for what's coming. Now, back to this coverage, this unhinged coverage, this propagandist coverage of what happened on Wednesday. Listen to, just listen to this media reaction. None of these people are banned, by the way. Listen to these reporters coming from the propaganda media and their reaction to what happened on Capitol Hill on Wednesday. Clip one.
Donald J. Trump called for the insurrection against the United States of America.
You talked about Al-Qaeda. What has he done in terms of incitement, right, that Osama bin Laden didn't do?
Each of these people should be shamed, and they're going to go back, you know, to the Olive Garden and to the Holiday Inn that they're staying at.
The way that we in the media speak about this is so important.
Today was terrorism.
We call them terrorists.
Terrorists.
Domestic terrorists.
Domestic terrorists.
Domestic terrorists.
These people are not Americans.
Kevin McCarthy was on Fox calling this un-American. Marco Rubio.
I don't know. There's a lot of empty rhetoric. There's a lot of empty concern.
Hawley, I should say, of all people, had the nerve to condemn the violence that we saw today.
Josh Hawley should resign in ignominy. Ted Cruz as well. But honestly, Mitch McConnell, too.
Shame on them. Shame on those senators. They sided with domestic terrorists yesterday, and we won't forget it.
This in no way absolves them of the sin and the sins that they and the president had committed against this country.
And if Donald Trump Jr., Rudy Giuliani, and Donald Trump are not arrested today for insurrection and taken to jail and booked.
It was encouraged by our Republican colleagues, and that is why every single one of them, especially because they have been the ones trying to steal this election, that's why we are calling for them to be removed.
But then Trump supporters come in and you open the doors for them. You open the doors for them and let them breach the people's house.
Yeah, we don't need to ban any of those commentators. That's completely rational thinking, what you heard right there. They can talk about, of course, they can talk about stealing the election if it's in reverse. They can talk about Donald Trump trying to steal the election. Anderson Cooper, by the way, as someone tweeted out yesterday, he's worth $100 million. And there he is. You notice the little dig? These people, when they go back to the Holiday Inn and the Olive Garden, you know, the working class people, the nobodies, the little peons, the sheeple, they have contempt. They can't even conceal it. They have contempt. As you heard yesterday, this is not an attack on Donald Trump. This is an attack on Donald Trump and half of the United States of America. They're going out. He's got 12 days until he's supposedly gone. So what's the problem? Take your 12 days, gloat about it, mock him, make fun of him, say, yeah, we beat you, funny, funny, ha ha. But that's not enough. That's not nearly enough, as you'll hear from Vice President Biden here in just a moment. They want revenge. They want revenge. They want to punish their enemies, their political enemies. This is the Reichstag fire, after all. There's a spirit behind this. As we covered yesterday, there is a real spirit world. There is a devil. The devil is behind it. That's how they reacted to what happened on Capitol Hill yesterday. And here's just a sampling. Again, these are both, I believe, these are from Grabian, so I want to give them credit. But here's just a sampling of their reporting last year, when all of the rioting was just going on, not one day, for months. Months and months. And here's how they reported on that. Clip two.
I argue to you tonight, all punches are not equal morally. In the eyes of the law, yes. But in the eyes of good and evil, here's the argument.
They are strictly principled anti-fascists. And what they see in the Trump administration and what they see happening in this country, they see the neo-fascism that we see. And they've taken a principled stand to stand against white supremacists and white nationalists wherever they may show up.
It says it right in the name, Antifa, anti-fascism, which is what they were there fighting. Listen, there's, you know, no organization is perfect. There was some violence.
I think that a lot of people recognize that when pushed, self-defense is a legitimate response to white supremacist and neo-Nazi violence.
The problem is to equate the violence in reaction against bigotry with the bigotry itself is to misunderstand the fact that when you go to cancer treatment, the radiation is tough treatment, but it is meant to remove the cancer.
There's a group of anti-fascists called the Black Bloc, which do tend to get violent. Their idea is, look, nonviolence hasn't worked, and we are going to try to stop this. But they wouldn't have been there. They wouldn't have been anywhere near there had it not been for the fact that white supremacists, neo-Nazis, were out scaring the living daylights out of most of the people in that town.
Thuggishness is thuggishness wherever it comes from politically, and we should be the first to call it out.
I disagree.
I disagree. We've got to allow for a little bit of violence. Ah, yes. Remember the days when we were told to romanticize the rioting and the burning and the looting and the murder? It's justified. Look, peaceful protests haven't worked, and so we've got to take to the streets. And so we've got to burn down the cities. And many of them on TV were actively calling for that. Burn it down. Burn it down. And then if they go into jail, you had Kamala Harris and Joe Biden there to bail them out. Let's get them out of jail. And some of these thugs that burned down the cities were also murderers and rapists. Let's get them out of jail. Let's make sure that they can roam the streets. Let's make sure that they can burn it down. And there they were, praising them. Praising them for months. And now, on a dime, as of Wednesday, CNN is now the Law and Order Network. These people have absolutely no credibility whatsoever. And you heard the first montage, just completely unhinged. Their hatred, their animosity. There's a spirit behind it. It's not even rational, what they're saying. There's a spirit behind it, and it's used yet again. It's being used as a pretext to crack down harder on the populace, to take away the freedoms and the liberties of ordinary Americans, to amass power. Listen to Vice President Biden, who not that long ago, he was talking about, hey, I'm here to heal. We need healing. We need to bring everyone together. He didn't have much to say about healing yesterday as he went, like his friends in the media, a full frontal assault on Donald J. Trump. He's public enemy number one. Here's Joe Biden from his speech yesterday, clip three.
What we witnessed yesterday was not dissent. It was not disorder. It was not protest. It was chaos. They weren't protesters. Don't dare call them protesters. They were a riotous mob, insurrectionist, domestic terrorist.
Don't you dare call those 200,000 people, those Trump supporters, don't you dare call them protesters. That's all that they called their friends in Antifa and Black Lives Matter last summer. These are protesters. These are not rioters. Don't you dare call them rioters. Don't you dare call them looters. And here they are. Here's Vice President Biden saying these are insurrectionists. I mean, this is the Reichstag fire. And you know, even with respect to Wednesday, as violent and as out of control as it got there because of a couple thousand people, there's more that's coming out about that story. And I suspect a week, two, maybe 2 months from now, we're going to know a lot more about this so-called insurrection than we do even now. This is out of Utah. It says one of the organizers of a protest in Provo that resulted in a motorist being shot was arrested on Thursday in Washington, D.C. It says John Sullivan was booked into the Utah County Jail. Well, this is actually going back to what happened in Utah. Sorry. It says, on June 29th, a group calling itself Back to Blue planned to drive around Provo Police Department and honk their horns to show support for law enforcement. Another group planned a counter-protest at the same time and place. On Facebook, its event page was originally titled End Police Brutality, but was later changed to Marching for Racial Equality. Well, anyway, it talks about how that this guy, this Black Lives Matter protester, he was arrested in Salt Lake. He was out in Washington, D.C. He was right there. Katie Pavlich tweeted this out. One of the men who was right next to Ashley Babbitt. That's the woman that was shot in the throat because she was trying to get through the door in one of the hallways. Shot in the throat at point blank range. And as I said yesterday, she shouldn't have been trespassing. That's on her. Cause and effect. But this is a Capitol Hill policeman who shot one of the protesters point-blank range in the neck. And this Black Lives Matter protester was right there next to her. He was right there in the mix. And there were others as well. This is from the New York Post. At least two known Antifa members were spotted among the throngs of pro-Trump supporters at the Capitol on Wednesday. The Antifa members disguised themselves with pro-Trump clothing to join in the D.C. rioting, said the sources, who spotted the infiltrators while monitoring video coverage from the Capitol. So why would Antifa want to infiltrate? Well, because they want it to be violent. They want it to be violent. They want to humiliate the Trump movement. We don't know how many. But here's the New York Post. The Washington Times has also had a story on this. The source from Utah. These were people, in the case of Utah, this was a guy coming from halfway across the country. And then you had the reports, as I said yesterday, of the vans and the buses moving up to unload Antifa. We're going to know more about this story as the days unfold. Listen again to Vice President Biden from yesterday, clip four.
No one can tell me that if had been a group of Black Lives Matter protesting yesterday, they wouldn't have been treated very, very differently than the mob of thugs that stormed the Capitol. We all know that's true, and it is unacceptable.
So we all know that's true. And you hear the same statements. Michelle Obama made the point. Chris Cuomo on MSNBC or CNN. If it was Black Lives Matter, and the truth of it is, of course, Black Lives Matter and Antifa, there were some in there. Okay, but leave that aside. That's a separate point. The point they're making is that if this was Black Lives Matter, I mean, there would have been a crackdown like you've never seen. Really? Because all of the images from last summer, the ones I remember, you had police officers, you had military personnel taking a knee before the Black Lives Matter movement. Did any of the BLM protesters get shot in the neck? Here they come and they're just completely revising the history. They're making it sound like that if it was BLM, they would have just gotten crushed. Well, there are reports that some of these Capitol Hill policemen just ushered people right on in to Congress. So then you have to wonder, is it really trespassing if they're just invited in? Now, there's certainly other video that shows there were skirmishes as well, that there was fighting, that they were pushing over barriers. It's an odd story, but you have to wonder how much of this was staged? How much of this was because of these infiltrators? We'll find out more as we proceed. Clearly, there were Trump supporters that got caught up into it, for sure. The woman that was shot in the neck, a clear Trump supporter, no doubt about it. What does he mean? What are they trying to do with this particular point? They're trying to stir up more racial hatred and violence. Michelle Obama, for her part, she came out with a statement yesterday. She makes this statement, and listen to, I'll just read it for you. Listen to what she says about last summer. I mean, she's just appalled by what happened Wednesday. And then the romanticizing of what happened last summer. She says, this summer's Black Lives Matter protests were an overwhelmingly peaceful movement. Overwhelmingly. You see, it was peaceful last summer. Remember how peaceful it was in the cities of America last summer? She says, our nation's largest demonstrations ever, bringing together people of every race and class and encouraging millions to re-examine their own assumptions and behavior. Look at these images. Isn't it wonderful? Millions coming together to destroy Walmart. Millions coming together to knock people unconscious in the street. Millions coming together to loot Macy's, to burn down Wendy's. She says, and yet in city after city, day after day, we saw peaceful protesters met with brute force. What? In city after city and day after day, we saw peaceful protesters met with brute force? Is that what we saw? Is that what you saw? She says, we saw cracked skulls and mass arrests, law enforcement pepper spraying its way through a peaceful demonstration for a presidential photo op. Did we see any of the protesters get shot in the neck by law enforcement? We certainly saw police officers get shot in the back of the head. But did any of the protesters, when they were looting Walmart, did they get shot in the neck? This is Michelle Obama. This is the former first lady. She says, and for those who call others unpatriotic for simply taking a knee in silent protest, for those who wonder why we need to be reminded that Black Lives Matter at all, yesterday made it painfully clear that certain Americans are, in fact, allowed to denigrate the flag and symbols of our nation. They've just got to look the right way. In other words, they've just got to, if they're white protesters, they're treated differently. And of course, 80% of those protesters last summer were white. So it has to be a racial thing. Revise the history. Tell lies. It was peaceful. She uses the word overwhelmingly. She's not alone. Overwhelmingly peaceful. And you think the media, they're going to call her on the carpet for that? Are they going to challenge her? No, they're going to praise her. They're going to join her. It was overwhelmingly peaceful. That's all that you need to know. I saw images yesterday. It was on Fox. You know, cameras going through the offices of Congress, and there were papers all over the floor and so on. Obviously, files had been rummaged through. And I was thinking, how many images did we see of that burned down police station in Minneapolis? I don't recall even seeing an image from the outside of the building actually burning. You saw in that montage we just played, there's definitely footage of burning cities. But here they are. They've got to go through every... papers are on the floor. There's papers on the floor. This was a violent insurrection. Where was the cameraman walking through the hallways in the offices of that police station that was burned down in Minneapolis because the police officers fled? They were told to stand down. Don't defend the precinct. Black Lives Matter is coming. Get out of the way. Let them do what they want. And they did. And they burned it to the ground. Michelle Obama, she's had a busy week speaking for Barack Obama. She wrote to Silicon Valley. She demanded that these social media companies stop fueling President Trump's monstrous behavior, she said. He is a monster. He needs to be banned. He needs to be shut down. He needs to be censored. And, of course, social media, they were quite happy to comply with her wishes. Listen to Glenn Greenwald. He's the journalist. He's a left-wing journalist, but he's one of the few that's honest, that tells the truth, that fights for freedom. He was on Fox last night, and listen to what he said about Michelle Obama going to big tech And then all of this censorship, you see, using Wednesday as a pretext to crack down, to amass even more power. Here's clip 9.
And what really struck me was not so much Mark Zuckerberg coming out and announcing where the president of the United States can and can't speak, how he can and can't be heard, as though it's some secret tribunal that meets and issues decrees. But Michelle Obama is part of a couple that is one of the richest and most powerful couples on the planet. And when she wanted to appeal to have her political adversary, Donald Trump, silenced even further, notice that she didn't call anyone in the United States Congress or elected officials in the government, because that's not where the power lies. She issued a letter pleading with the Silicon Valley oligarch to do her bidding, which is to silence the president of the United States. In a democracy, that would be a decision made by elected leaders. In an oligarchy or some kind of like techocracy, this is something that a very small handful of tech monopolists decide who can be heard, what information can be disseminated, what gets labeled true or false. It's really dystopian and obviously alarming.
Obviously it's alarming. If you're a traditionalist, if you love the Constitution, if you appreciate the freedoms enshrined in that document, it should be alarming. But it's not. It's not for those in the propaganda media. They love it. They love iron-fisted rule, as long as it's a Marxist revolutionary at the top. They love it. They love it. He went on to say that this is their new war on terror, and the terrorists are not coming from abroad. The terrorists, in their mind, are their political enemies at home. It's the Trump supporters. It's not enough. It's not enough that he's supposed to leave office in 12 days. They've got to go after him. Nancy Pelosi was out there yesterday calling for him to be removed from office. And she said if the 25th Amendment isn't invoked, then they may have to impeach and convict him in Congress. Here's Nancy Pelosi, the speaker, clip 6.
The president of the United States incited an armed insurrection against America. In calling for this seditious act, the president has committed an unspeakable assault on our nation and our people. I join the Senate Democratic leader in calling on the vice president to remove this president by immediately invoking the 25th Amendment. If the vice president and the cabinet do not act, the Congress may be prepared to move forward with impeachment.
Wow. This is serious, I guess. It's not enough that he's voted out of office. It's not enough that they were able to rig the election to get rid of him. They've got to go after him and forcibly remove him. Now, she did stress that she prays for him every day. So don't take her words as anything that, like, she hates him or something like that. She loves him. She loves him. But he needs to be removed. John Brennan, the former CIA chief under Obama. What else must Trump do before he is removed from office? Our Vice President Pence, the cabinet, and the Republicans in Congress waiting for a disaster of unimaginable proportions to take place before they come to their senses? He's got to be removed. And then you've got some of these people from Trump's administration resigning in protest. They're so offended. They're so offended that what happened on Wednesday, this is an armed insurrection. There they are, just lapping up everything that the propaganda media tell them. Getting caught up into the spirit of what everyone's saying. Even Bill Barr comes out with a statement yesterday, just piling it on top of Donald Trump. His conduct was a betrayal. He's betraying his office, says Bill Barr, of all people. Christopher Wray, he heads up the FBI under Donald Trump. He doesn't take a shot at his boss here. But listen to this and then ask yourself, where was this statement 5-6 months ago? The violence and destruction of property at the U.S. Capitol building yesterday showed a blatant and appalling disregard for our institutions of government and the orderly administration of the democratic process. As we've said consistently, we do not tolerate violent agitators. We tolerated it all of last year. That's the truth. We tolerated it all of last year, and then we emblazoned Black Lives Matter on every NBA court. The National Basketball Association. They're to be honored and praised for all the destruction from 2020. What did the FBI do last week, or rather last year, for Minneapolis or Portland? For D.C. or San Francisco? New York City? Now there's a crackdown. I mean, and I think 50, 60 people have been arrested. And they should be. If they've broken the law, they should be. Is Kamala going to bail them out? Here's Vice President yesterday, the incoming president, we're led to believe, and he's going to heal the nation? Is that what he's aiming to do? Clip 7.
The past 4 years, we've had a president who's made his contempt for our democracy, our Constitution, the rule of law clear in everything he has done. He unleashed an all-out assault on our institutions of our democracy from the outset. And yesterday was but the culmination of that unrelenting attack. He's attacked the free press, who dared to question his power, repeatedly calling the free press the enemy of the people. Language, at the time he first used it, I and others said, has long been used by autocrats and dictators all over the world to hold on to power.
That's the vice president under Barack Obama. Full frontal assault on Donald Trump. What a sham it's been, this talk of unity. He's signaling, and his supporters are signaling, his friends in the media are signaling, that there is coming a time of retribution against Donald Trump and his supporters. One last clip from Joe Biden, clip 8.
He's attacked our intelligence services, who dared tell the American people the truth about the effort of a foreign power to elect him 4 years ago, choosing instead to believe the word of Vladimir Putin over the word of those who've sworn their allegiance to this nation. He thought he could stack the courts with friendly judges who would support him no matter what. And then there's the attack on the Department of Justice. Treating the Attorney General as his personal lawyer and the department as his personal law firm. And then yesterday, a culmination of attack on our institutions of democracy. This time, the Congress itself, inciting a mob to attack the Capitol, to threaten elected representatives of the people of this nation, and even the vice president, to stop the Congress from ratifying the will of the American people in a just completed free and fair election. Our president is not above the law.
A time for healing. A time to bring everyone together. This is their time to go after their enemies. This is payback time. As you heard Joe Scarborough screaming, they should be arrested for insurrection. Donald Trump, his son, Rudy Giuliani, all of them. Well, President Trump, Twitter finally decided toward the end of the day, you know what, I guess we can put him back on. I guess we can let him speak a little bit. We're controlling this. We're keeping close watch on this. But we'll let him speak. And he came out with a statement last night, 2.5 minutes or so. And he said this first about the violence at the Capitol on Wednesday, clip 11.
Like all Americans, I am outraged by the violence, lawlessness, and mayhem. I immediately deployed the National Guard and federal law enforcement to secure the building and expel the intruders. America is and must always be a nation of law and order. The demonstrators who infiltrated the Capitol have defiled the seat of American democracy. To those who engaged in the acts of violence and destruction, you do not represent our country. And to those who broke the law, you will pay.
Ban him! We've got to ban him. He can't say that kind of, that's inflammatory language. You mean he's going to uphold law and order? There's people that broke into the Capitol that are going to go to jail? There he is. That's a leader for you. He knows that some of them were his own supporters. And he's not standing in the way of justice like so many have before him. He doesn't have two standards of justice like so many do all around him. Here's clip 12.
We have just been through an intense election and emotions are high, but now tempers must be cooled and calm restored. We must get on with the business of America. My campaign vigorously pursued every legal avenue to contest the election results. My only goal was to ensure the integrity of the vote. In so doing, I was fighting to defend American democracy.
Who's calling for healing? some touching words, and these next words, some would say, is, well, finally he's conceding. Finally he's accepting the fact that the courts have rejected his appeals and that Congress has certified the results of the election. Clip 13.
Now Congress has certified the results. A new administration will be inaugurated on January 20th. My focus now turns to ensuring a smooth, orderly, and seamless transition of power. This moment calls for healing and reconciliation. 2020 has been a challenging time for our people. A menacing pandemic has upended the lives of our citizens, isolated millions in their homes, damaged our economy, and claimed countless lives. Defeating this pandemic and rebuilding the greatest economy on earth will require all of us working together.
Everyone working together. I mean, these are words of one who wants to see the people of the United States come together. These are conciliatory words. Now, we've had something to say about the outcome of this election, and there's still, as I've been saying, there's still 12 days to go. You can read my trumpet brief from last night. And, of course, you've seen plenty of our programs to know this church's position on what will happen come January the 20th. But listen to this final clip from the president's statement just last night, clip 14.
To the citizens of our country, serving as your president has been the honor of my lifetime. And to all of my wonderful supporters, I know you are disappointed, but I also want you to know that our incredible journey is only just beginning.
The incredible journey with Donald Trump is only just beginning. Some pretty good words to end on for President Trump. It's only just the beginning. I mentioned to the students yesterday in a forum, we have a church-wide fast coming up in a few days, Sunday, in fact. And you're welcome, if you're not a church member, you're welcome to join us in that fast. The point that I made to the students is that this is something that goes all the way back to the Old Testament, when an entire nation would come together and fast and pray before God. In fact, you can go back even to some of the early history of the United States, when some of the founders, or even further on, when Abraham Lincoln called for a time of prayer and fasting. Prayer and fasting. Our church has done it multiple times over the years, several times just in the past few years. And God responds. God responds to people when they afflict their souls. There's certainly, as Isaiah 58 brings out, you can fast for selfish reasons. But if it's a fast unto the eternal, and if everyone's on board with it, what a powerful impact. What a powerful impact it can have on the church and even on world events. There's an example in 2 Chronicles 20 starting in the first part of the chapter. And it's about King Jehoshaphat, and he was about to be invaded, the people of Judah. And Jehoshaphat, how did he rally the troops? How did he rally the people of Judah? Well, this is quite a unique military strategy, if you want to call it that. Spiritually, of course, it was. It says, and Jehoshaphat, this is verse 3, 2 Chronicles 20 and verse 3, and Jehoshaphat feared and set himself to seek the Eternal and proclaimed a fast throughout all Judah, the whole state of Judah. Everyone was fasting. It says, so Judah gathered together to ask help from the Lord, and from all the cities of Judah, they came to seek the Eternal. Everyone got into it. Everyone beseeched their God. Everyone cried out to their Maker. Men, women, children. And God answered. God answered their prayers. God responded to this fast. Look down in verse 16. Well, verse 15 it says, and he said, hearken you, all Judah, and you inhabitants of Jerusalem, and you King Jehoshaphat, here's God's response, thus says the Eternal unto you, be not afraid nor dismayed by reason of this great multitude, this army, this invading army. Don't be afraid, God said to Judah, for the battle is not yours, but God's. Look, put it in God's care. Put it in God's hands, and then rest in faith, knowing that God will intervene, God will do his part, God will keep his promise, God will fulfill his prophecy. Verse 16, it says, tomorrow go you down against them. Behold, they come up by the cliff of Ziz, and you shall find them at the end of the brook before the wilderness of Jeruel. And you shall not need to fight in this battle. Set yourselves, stand you still, and see the salvation of the Eternal, verse 17 says. The Eternal with you, O Judah and Jerusalem. Fear not, nor be dismayed. Tomorrow go out against them, for the Lord will be with you. And so they went out to the battle, and what they saw, what they witnessed, a tremendous miracle, an earth-shaking miracle. They went out to the battle and they saw this invading army turn on itself. All of these, I think it was Syria, I forget the nation that was invading, but all of these soldiers, they turned on one another. And as you can read from this passage, study it later, after this scene, this miraculous scene, the entire army was laying there dead before the people of Judah. What a spectacular answer to a nationwide fast. In this case, the nation of Judah, fasting shows God that we, like Jehoshaphat, are willing to rely upon his strength and not our own physical resources, not our own human reasoning or ingenuity, but we're here to rely on God and his strength and his intervention and his power. And he's demonstrated over and over again that when his people come together in a church-wide fast, to humbly prepare, or rather pray and earnestly seek God for his timely intervention, that he does powerfully respond. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, and we've got quite a stack of emails piling up, you can join them, and we'll get to them soon. We'll get to them next week, hopefully. But you can email the program at td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us on today's show. We thank you for joining us all week. What a week of broadcasting it's been, and we look forward to joining you again next week.